I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. What if I told you that tens of millions of dollars of Climate Commitment Act money is being pumped into a program that experts on all sides agree will actually be a net negative for the environment? Shocking, right? Also, state lawmakers are working into the wee morning hours, but what are they up to when the public isn't watching? Plus, Amazon continues to move jobs out of Seattle as the city's anti-business animus continues. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Really interesting story coming up for you a little bit. I'm sure it'll come as a surprise to no one. You know, all that additional money that you're paying at the pump, and Governor Inslee says, oh, you ought to be happy to help because it's going to help the climate and help the children. Well, tens of millions of dollars of that revenue that's coming into the Climate Commitment Act, it's going straight into a program that experts on all sides of the political spectrum agree is not going to do anything to help the environment, and in fact, quite the opposite. So we're going to break that down for you. It has to do with Washington's working forests. But first, it's midnight. Do you know where your state lawmakers are? Well, they're in Olympia. Technically, they're doing the people's business, although sometimes not the business I would like them to focus on. But you're seeing some of these really critical debates happen in the wee morning hours when 99% of Washingtonians will never witness these debates. We'll never hear these conversations around policies that are going to impact their lives. And I get it. It's a short session. It's 2 months. It is not uncommon for debates to go past midnight into the early morning hours. We've seen it. I would argue that they need much better time management. And if they did what I said they should do and limit each lawmaker to just two bills that they can introduce, you wouldn't have to go into the wee morning hours. But who am I? I'm just a lady with a podcast. What do I know? But then it's contingent on people like us and what is left of the media in Washington state to try to inform you of what happened overnight. One of the really important things that happened in the dark last night is the state house passed a bill that would give unemployment benefits to striking workers. Yes. And now there's some argument that the bill was slightly improved during this process. I actually think it was made worse. I'll discuss that in a moment. But this from the Washington State Standard. Washington House approves unemployment benefits for striking workers. It says under the legislation, striking workers would become eligible for unemployment insurance on the second Sunday following the first day of a strike, and could then begin to receive benefit payments after an additional 1 week waiting period. The bill would also remove a section of state law that disqualifies employees from unemployment insurance during employer-initiated labor lockouts. Lawmakers amended the bill on the floor, and here's the part where I'm like, is that really better? These changes included adding a 4 week limit on benefits for striking workers. Okay, I like that. Got to have a limit on it. And language to shift the cost of the benefits onto the employer involved in the labor dispute, rather than spreading the expense across the unemployment insurance system. Another amendment specified that benefits may not be paid during strikes prohibited by federal or state law or a court order, which makes sense. But it's that part about not socializing it out. In theory, I'm always going to err on the side of less socialism. So, like, look, if you're, and that was the problem with this bill inherently, if you've got workers who are of their own volition striking, not going into work, not getting a paycheck, and that is by their choosing, you're telling me that we, the taxpayers, need to foot the bill for their pay, their unemployment during that period of time? That's ridiculous. What this amendment did is said that when there's labor disputes, the employer needs to foot the bill for that. And I actually don't think that's very fair to the employer either. So now as the government, you're going to say, oh, you have to pay your workers during a strike, whether the strike is even justified or not. I mean, hell, don't we have Starbucks baristas striking? I mean, we're trying to strike or unionizing. And it's like, what? They're like the highest paid baristas in the world. And Starbucks will give them, if they want it, like money to go to college. So you're telling me if these, you know, teenagers and 20 somethings all got their, you know, panties in a bunch over something, I don't know, oat milk or whatever, that Starbucks has to pay them? So I'm, as much as I appreciate that burden not being placed on taxpayers, I also think it's absurd for the government to give striking workers this kind of protection and then also force the employer to bear the burden of the unemployment benefits. In a moment, I'll get to our daily subscriber show poll because I made it on this subject. I was very curious what you guys thought about that, but I had to laugh because you know what happened at the same time that they were passing this bill, which, by the way, I got to give, I think there was four, let me double check on that, and I should read their names, because remember what I've always said about positive reinforcement? All the Republicans voted against this. Five Democrats also voted against it. I mean, there's still enough Democrats for it to pass, but Mike Chapman, Deborah Enteman, Larry Springer, Mylan Tai, and Amy Wallen all voted against it. So, okay, I'm going to give you a little appreciation there. But you know what happened while this was going on last night? The Stranger announced they're forming a union. The writers at The Stranger are forming a union. Related? Well, maybe so. It's called the Index Media Union, which apparently owns The Stranger and then some of these other alt-weeklies like the Portland Mercury. So from the Index Media Union account, for decades, workers at The Stranger on Portland Mercury have fostered an alternative voice in Pacific Northwest media. Today, we have asked the upper management at Index Media to voluntarily recognize our union. Index Media workers are deeply invested in our work, but we face uncertainty, ever-growing responsibilities, oh, God forbid, and wages far below those of our industry competitors. We realize the best way to ensure we are heard in shaping the future of this company, our roles and wages, is to form a union. We've built a reputation on eating the rich and standing up for progressive values. We're asking Index Media to embody those values through voluntary recognition. These might be the only strikes I'd ever, like, fully support. In fact, to my friends at The Stranger, strike as much as you'd like in 2024. Man, I'll go on the picket lines with you. In fact, I think 2024 in the election cycle is a wonderful time for you to go on strike. So I'm fully in support of that. I will stand with my comrades on the picket line as long as you need, especially since under this bill, if it becomes law, taxpayers aren't going to bear the burden of your unemployment insurance while you go on strike, and The Stranger will have to do that. And then maybe all of this will just lead The Stranger to fold. You know who's supporting The Stranger in their stand against evil rich people? It'll come as a surprise. The socialists. Socialists love this. The Seattle Democratic Socialists of America said, "Solidarity time. We stand with The Stranger, the Portland Mercury, and Ever Out." Wow. Imagine that. The socialists supporting unionization at The Stranger. It's all very interesting. So we're keeping an eye on this. Again, it happened overnight. There's some other debates that have been happening in the wee morning hours, if you will. And I will say, you know, there's a couple bills that I've been getting a ton of emails from you guys about discussing. We're going to talk about them on the show tomorrow, so don't panic. One of them has to do with a discussion on instructional material and school funding tied to instructional material, which will essentially give the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction much more power over what's taught in schools. And that can be a bad thing, depending on who is in that position. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow, so don't worry. But wanted to keep you guys up to date on a big thing that happened overnight last night. Meanwhile, Amazon's moving another 1,000 employees to Bellevue from other campuses in Washington State, which of course means Seattle. Let's just be honest here. This is from the Center Square. Amazon's footprint is expanding outside of Seattle to Bellevue, again from the Center Square. According to an Amazon spokesperson, Amazon's expansion to Bellevue and the east side of Lake Washington is part of a natural progression of the company's growth in the Puget Sound region. The expansion was also influenced by Bellevue's available space for Amazon and, shocker, more business-friendly community. Amazon is not subject to a payroll tax in Bellevue. Amazon is subject to Seattle's Jumpstart payroll tax, which requires businesses with at least $7 million in annual payroll to pay a tax for all their Seattle employees who make at least $150,000 a year. And you'll recall that this really was meant to be a tax on Amazon. So back in the day, you had the head tax that was passed in Seattle, which was a tax per job. It was eventually reversed course because it was just all messy. And then they passed this tax on high-paying jobs, which was their way to tax some of the high-paying tech jobs. So it really was specifically a tax on Amazon. And then, as we discussed on the show last week, there is currently an initiative to essentially expand this high-paying jobs tax. So what the initiative that they're collecting signatures for now, that they hope to have on the ballot in November, what it would do is it would add additional taxes to companies for employees making over $1 million. And that can include not just your base salary, but stocks and all of that stuff. And what did we say after that happened? Well, that is like the biggest commercial in the world for Bellevue. Every time there have been these anti-business moves in Seattle, specifically those designed to target large employers like Amazon, what has Amazon responded by doing? Moving jobs to Bellevue. So if this initiative passes and voters decide to vote on it, which is their right, there's no reason to believe that the result won't be Amazon continuing to move jobs to Bellevue. And we've seen, you know, Amazon at one point was saying, oh, we have 55,000 workers in Seattle. Now I see them saying more, you know, closer to 50,000 workers. And you're going to continue to see that shift. And Bellevue has welcomed Amazon. The mayor of Bellevue has welcomed Amazon and talked about the importance of meaningful, respectful public-private partnerships. And you see what that has done for Bellevue, which is inarguably a much more pleasant city to live in, a much more pleasant city to visit, to shop in. And it's because of all these things and the way that they value businesses, entrepreneurship, the way they don't demonize people with money and realize, hey, if we play nice with them, we might even get some stuff from them. They might even offer. I mean, Amazon's in Bellevue helping with some of their 20-year plans and some, I mean, park spaces for everyone, not just for Amazon employees. And that's like the, you know, you get more, what is it? You get more honey, more bees with honey. Something like that. You get more bees with honey.
No,
why do I suck so bad at
honey? So,
why do I suck so bad at remembering
flies with honey?
You catch more flies with vinegar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You do. I'm sure you guys will tell me what it is, but you know exactly what you're saying. And you know, one of the things that I got to say really strikes me about this. I hate to say I told you so, but I remember when I was back at Fox 13, and I had Councilwoman Shama Sawant on the show, and I asked her at the time, because you had these threats from Amazon, essentially, that, hey, if you guys go forward with these taxes that are targeting us, we might not have a choice but to up and leave. And I asked her explicitly, I said, if Jeff Bezos takes 10,000 jobs and moves them out of Seattle to Bellevue, are you going to own that? And she said, yes, I'll own that. Yes, I'll own that. Guess who's not around right now to own that? Guess who's no longer in office to own the consequences of the policies that she pushed for? Shama Sawant. And isn't that convenient? All right, coming up next, we'll talk about $70 million in Climate Commitment Act money that is going to a program that experts on all sides agree will actually be a net negative for the environment. Huh. How is that committing to the climate? Makes no sense. First, we've talked to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com, and I think he is also very eager, like the rest of us, to figure out when the Fed is going to drop interest rates. It is an election year after all, and he says that even though the Fed didn't drop them a few weeks ago, it's very likely at some point, if not for anything else than just to show that, hey, America's doing okay in an election year, that those rates will come down, and the result, certainly for the housing market, would be positive.
They say that the Fed and the presidency, you know, they're not supposed to influence each other. But let's be honest. Come on. They're not supposed to.
Right.
But they do. So, you know, Biden's administration is going to do whatever they can to put whatever pressure they can, you know, on the Fed to keep lowering interest rates down, because that's what it's going to make the American population happy and allow people to get into ownership, or at least give them, you know, give them that peace of mind.
Yeah. And so if you're kind of like Wes, I mean, one of the things he said is, obviously, if you're selling your home this year, you want those interest rates to drop, because you're going to have a lot more buyers out there jumping on it. You're going to get competitive offers, et cetera. But it's really good to have your home ready to hit the market the day that those interest rates drop. So if you're thinking about selling your home, but you're like, gosh, it needs some cosmetic upgrades or whatever it is, get in touch with Wes Jones today. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. They have something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where they can actually come in and manage your home improvements for you. They can even help you pay for it up front. and then you pay them back on the back end after your home sells. So a lot of cool stuff. You can start by using their home value calculator to see how much their home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. If you already understand that Governor Inslee's Climate Commitment Act is a complete sham that is needlessly hurting working class people, then this segment is not to convince you of anything, because you already know that to be true. What this segment is for, and who I want to speak to, are people who might not mind that gas prices have gone way up since the beginning of the year. Are people who might not mind that their budgets are stretched a little thinner because they care about the environment and they believe the governor when he says that ultimately the impact is going to be a better environment for you and for your kids. So that's who I want to talk to today, because if you believe that, it's not true. It's not true. And the example that I'm going to give you today, I hope can help you begin to understand that. You know, we've already seen all these examples of climate goals that the governor has set that he never met. And he knew he wasn't meeting, because the government website meant to track those goals on things around recycling and carbon emissions, scrubbed the goals, hid that information so it was harder for people who do care about environmental outcomes to see what was happening. So we already know that the governor has a failed track record on environmental issues. And I, for one, care about the environment, and it's not enough for me to just see someone talking about it. You know, I can say, oh, I'm going to do all these things for the environment. If I don't actually do those things for the environment and I spend billions of dollars for nothing, am I really an environmentalist? Am I really the climate governor or the climate presidential candidate? I would argue no. So there is a specific line item for all this money coming in through the Climate Commitment Act, $2.2 billion so far, way more than they ever thought would come in from these carbon auctions. There's a line item that was $70 million. And what they used that $70 million to do is to buy out, essentially, shut down a working forest in Washington owned by the state. What's interesting about this particular line item is it's actually an agreed upon fact that using that $70 million to shut down this working forest will be a net negative for the environment. Experts on both sides agree with this. Experts with the state of Washington, experts in the private sector, and the commissioner of public lands, Hillary Frantz, a Democrat, a progressive Democrat, does not believe that this will help the environment, but it's being done anyway. So to talk more about this, I wanted to bring in Heath Heikkilä. He is the Director of Government Affairs of the American Forest Resource Council, and he is trying to raise alarm bells over all of this. How did this come to your attention?
Yeah, thanks. So last session, late in the session, as they were working on budgets, they actually inserted $70 million in CCA funds into the capital budget to stop timber harvesting on 2,000 acres of Department of Natural Resources state trust lands. These are lands that are managed under strict environmental regulations to produce Washington-grown wood products and generate non-tax revenue for schools and things like fire departments and other public services, while also providing for wildlife habitat and the other things we like from our forests.
Okay, so if that's CCA money, then I have to imagine that doing that and spending $70 million on it has a benefit to the environment, because that's the goal, right? So what's the climate benefit to doing that?
Well, unfortunately, there is no climate benefit from it. And in fact, I would argue that it's a climate negative. And, you know, folks like Todd Myers over at the Washington Policy Center, as well as case studies that have been done looking at this, what happens is simply we end up importing our wood products from other countries with transportation related emissions, or from countries that don't have the environmental protections that we do, or we use materials that actually take more energy and therefore emit more carbon to produce them. We substitute those for those wood products.
Well, let's back up then. What is the claimed climate benefit from shutting down that working forest?
Well, they would claim that simply by walking away from that forest, that somehow that carbon will be stored forever and that these forests will continue to store carbon. That's not supported by the science, though. When you look at it, an older forest, an old growth forest, it certainly stores a lot of carbon, but it is actually not sequestering or pulling down carbon at the same rate that a younger, healthy, growing forest is. And we also know here in the Northwest more and more these years what a risk wildfires are. And those older stands are more susceptible to insects, disease, and wildfires, which then have huge carbon emissions associated with them.
Why would they be convinced to believe that spending $70 million to shut down this working forest would somehow benefit the environment?
Well, sometimes in Olympia, things are about politics more than they are necessarily about, science or facts. The reality is there is a, definitely a growing movement of kind of anti-forestry activism, particularly within the Democrat Party, that drove, for these, this budget proviso to be included.
One of the things that's interesting here, though, is I think it might be easier for kind of the pro-CCA crowd to dismiss me saying that, to dismiss you saying that, to dismiss Todd Myers saying that. But I mean, Hillary Frans, a Democrat, a commissioner of public lands, she's in agreement, is she not?
Yes, well, in a recent speech that she gave, she essentially outlined that when you look at it, whether it's the science or it's the economics or just the social implications of managing these forests, that the folks that are really trying to shut down these forests are just wrong on the facts.
Those who want to stop timber production and forest management are wrong. They're dead wrong. They're wrong on the climate science. They're wrong on the economics, and they're wrong on the impacts to our state and our environment.
And actually, officials from the Department of Natural Resources career staff who were brought before the legislature to provide an update on this budget item just this past December also commented after questioning from committee members that this will not help our climate and there were better ways to spend these CCA dollars if our goal was to reduce carbon emissions.
And so,
For what it cost you to purchase 1 acre of timber, you could have planted 20 acres of burned over ground. Would you sequester more carbon by reforesting 20 acres than you would setting aside 1 acre of carbon dense forest and sending it to old growth?
Acquiring lands that are risk of conversion is going to do more, I think, as that for that carbon benefit than setting aside forests, than potentially even doing reforestation. Because again, once that land is now no longer forest land, it stops. It is not going to sequester any more carbon.
And one of the ways they pointed out, because you had referenced it a little bit earlier, is helping prevent forest fires. So what could we do with that $70 million that would be better suited to actually have positive climate outcomes?
Well, we could be thinning our forests to reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfires, which is in many states is becoming the largest source of carbon emissions here in the West as more and more forests burn. Or we could have put that money towards reforesting acres that had burned, where you're actually going back in and putting those trees back on the landscape so they are once again sequestering carbon.
Do you have any, is there any inclination that given what DNR said, given what Hillary Frans has said, and some of the evidence that you just laid out, and some of the possible alternatives, that they might back away from this particular line item?
Well, no, I think the folks, the activists who pressed so hard for this last session are actually actively working again to try to get another amount of CCA dollars in these budgets to set aside additional acres. So I don't know what the legislature will do this time, but I don't think it's the best look for the CCA and spending these dollars. Our forests have a tremendous opportunity, frankly, to be a climate solution, but when you're promoting the wrong policies that are actually going to cause more environmental harm elsewhere. It makes no sense, particularly when you look here in Washington. Many people don't realize half of our forest lands we've set aside from any kind of timber management, and that's to do the right thing for wildlife habitat and other things. So we've really struck a balance here in this state with natural resources and forest management, but all we're going to do is export our demand to places that don't have that balance.
These kind of conversations can come across as like insider baseball. It's a foresty issue, like $70 million. And sometimes I personally struggle with how to make people realize that if, for instance, I'm opposed personally to the CCA in its current form. I don't believe that we have to have environmental policies that hurt working class people in that way at the gas pump. But, you know, the retort and what the governor has said and Democrats have said is, oh, you know, if you're opposed to it, you hate the environment. Like, that's it. You hate the environment, you want the earth to end in a fiery blaze or whatever it is. So how do we begin to push back against that narrative that if you have questions about the CCA, how the money is spent, about the increase to gas prices, that you just are like a climate change denier?
Well, I mean, I always think, Brandy, where does the root word of conservation come from? It comes from conservative, and it's essentially making those choices we all do, really to care for the environment, which we do in this state and this country, really better than any other place in the world. So I think we have a lot to be proud of in terms of what we're doing. And in most cases, that comes down to, you know, individuals wanting to do the right thing rather than necessarily being coerced to do so.
Yeah. And I want to just end with something that isn't, like, I guess, climate related, so to speak, but is maybe an impact. If you have the $70 million designed to shut down a working forest, are we losing jobs?
Well, yes, absolutely. This has a pretty significant impact, probably about $180 million economic impact of negative economic impact. We are losing revenue, that revenue I mentioned earlier, to go to school construction, to libraries, fire districts, et cetera. And then meanwhile, we're importing, frankly, more of our wood products. The amount of wood that we're talking about here is enough to frame about 9,000 homes. So this is at the same time we're having an affordable housing crisis in this state. These are the kinds of decisions this policy, has.
Yeah, it's not as if for the whole, you know, don't cut down trees crowd. It's not as if some trees aren't still going to cut down. I mean, we're still building these things. We still need those materials. And as you point out, we're just getting them from somewhere else in ways that are going to put way more carbon out into the atmosphere. It's costing us jobs. It's this kind of policy making and this sort of decision making. It really makes me scratch my head how the people who make these decisions are in any sort of position of power. Heath, we really appreciate it. Keep your eye on the rest of that CCA spending for us, okay?
I'll do my best. Thanks, Brandy. Thanks for your work.
Again, that's Heath Heikkilä. He's the Director of Government Affairs of the American Forest Resource Council. We appreciate his time and his expertise. But again, I would speak to people who support the Climate Commitment Act. Do you support this $70 million spend? If the answer is no, do you also support taking a closer look at the other $2.2 billion that are being spent from the revenue that, again, is coming from Washingtonians at the gas pump? Because I promise you that this $70 million isn't the only thing that is going to a program that we're supposed to believe is going to help the environment, that it will actually have a net negative impact on the environment. It is not just coming from me. It's not just coming from Heath. It's not just coming from the Washington Policy Center, a conservative think tank. It is coming from DNR. It is coming from the Washington State Department of Natural Resources, which had to admit under questioning that this would not have a benefit on the environment and on carbon sequestration, and that you'd get much more of that if you manage the forests that we have that are susceptible to wildfires. The benefits would be far greater. It's coming from Hillary Frans, who's running for Congress, a Democrat, was running for governor, is the current commissioner of public lands, a progressive Democrat who knows this stuff and who understands that people who believe that spending $70 million to shut down operations on a 2,000-acre working forest because they think that's going to help the environment are dead wrong. And it's actually dangerous to allow those forests to just go unmanaged and to become these old growth, overburdened forests. It's dangerous for the state of Washington. It's also bad for the environment. So I would ask people who have supported Inslee's Climate Commitment Act up and down, is this enough proof that this isn't actually about helping the environment? You have a governor who in the last year has claimed that things are so bad with our environment that today people in Washington are actually dying earlier from pollution.
There are neighborhoods today in our state where people are dying 2.5 years younger on average because of pollution.
You have a governor who has, in defending the CCA, used children as little political pawns and said that their very futures and lives and future generations are at risk if we don't act with urgency.
If these kids, when they're 72 years of age, like I am, will have a Washington state where there's some trees that haven't burned down, where they can breathe because forest fire smoke is not ruining their lungs, where their mom and dad got a little help financially with their utility bills, where they can drive, get to on a school bus that's electric and drive for free. What I would say to them is these kids deserve those things.
You have a governor who says stuff like that and insists that you and I pay more money into a program to help the environment, to stop people from dying, to save our children's futures, but who won't say jack when it is proven that programs they're spending that money on, spending your hardworking money on, will actually make the environment worse. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I believe in the climate industrial complex. I first got red-pilled with the homeless industrial complex. I saw billions of dollars being dumped into programs designed to help get people off our streets, and we have a worse homeless crisis today than we have ever had. And now I see that same thing playing out with Inslee's climate agenda, where it's like, oh, this is feel good. We all want to do this. We all want to help the environment. But don't look too closely. Don't look at the books. Don't notice all the cronies that we're giving this money to when we shame you for pushing back against how expensive it is to buy food, how expensive it is to buy gas. You bring that up, we're going to tell you that you're a climate change denier. And then when you point out that we're spending your money on things that aren't helping the environment, we'll find new ways to vilify you. Repeal the CCA. Repeal the CCA. You have a chance to do it this year. Every single person in this state who actually values the environment should be demanding that our government is taking steps to improve the environment. And when money is spent on things that will not improve the environment, they realize it, they acknowledge it, and they move on until they're willing to do that. Not a freaking dime more. Unreal. All right, speaking of unreal and unbelievable, we're going to talk about a $1.8 million spend on Seattle's waterfront, which Nicole and I were just down at the waterfront last night. Well, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. This is for some bathrooms, some all-gender bathrooms. Now, this story is unbelievable to me, but not for the reason you might suspect. We'll get to that coming up next. First, I've been talking about insurance, First Mark Insurance, and I just love that Mike and I did the First Mark Challenge last spring. We're now members of the First Mark family. I hear from friends all the time, listeners and viewers all the time, who said, oh my gosh, why did I wait to do that? That took the First Mark Challenge, and now they're members of the First Mark family. There's a few benefits. There's a lot of benefits, but one, it doesn't cost you anything. So it's like, it's, yes, they're an advertiser on our show, but you don't have to give them any money. They do all this work for you to help you navigate the complex world of insurance. You never pay them a dime. They pick up the phone when you call them. Imagine that. I just had to call First Mark yesterday. They can help save you money. And most importantly, they can help make sure that you have the right insurance for your needs. It's one thing to like check a box and go through a big box carrier and say, hey, I want to cut costs here and there. And then you might pay for it in a really big way on the back end. In fact, Dave Taylor, he is the CEO of First Mark, and he was telling us a story about how this guy he knew had tried to save a little bit of money, and then all his classic cars burned, and it was like, oh my gosh, on the back end, they shouldn't have done that. He should have been a member of the First Mark family. But anyway, he says that this is also about saving you time, not just money. He says it can be really consuming for people to shop for themselves, so why not let First Mark do it for you?
You want to know you're getting a competitive price. How else do you do that unless you're willing to yourself shop 10 different insurance companies to find out?
Right.
Do you trust your agent at one of these captive carriers? So get a competitive price. And the best way to do that is have a broker, again, like First Mark, shop the market for you.
Yeah. And that's what they did for us. Mike and I were really underinsured, so they came back. We got better insurance for the same price we were paying before. It was a really no-brainer. So take the First Mark challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They have your best interests in mind. And again, you don't pay them anything. So if you haven't done it already, do it today. All right. Seattle is spending $1.8 million on all-gender bathrooms for the Seattle waterfront. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Now, that is actually not what outrages me. I prefer all gender bathrooms. Am I wrong for that? I've talked about that on the show. I'm a big fan of just a bathroom for one person. Nicole has pee shyness, so she likes it because she's not next to some stranger in a stall like, hey, I can't go unless I write. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'll get to what bothers me, but this is from the Center Square. Again, Seattle to spend $1.8 million on all gender waterfront bathroom facility. So the whole facility, I don't care in regards to it being a non-gender, all gender, whatever it is. What does bother me, however, is the price tag. And for some reason, the government cannot build a toilet for less than $1 million. If you're watching the show today and you're like a contractor or you build things, you tell me what you would quote this project on if it was like for your employer. You were building something for the private sector. You tell me how much you could build this for. So this again from Center Square. The city of Seattle will spend $1.8 million to construct an all-gender bathroom facility near the waterfront. The facility will consist of 6 individual all-gender stalls, including an accessible stall. The breakdown of the $1.8 million bathroom facility sees $300,000 for each all-gender stall. Someone tell me what costs $300,000 per stall. $1.8 million.
Toilets?
That tile better be made of like extinct turtle shell.
From Italy. I'm sure it's something. From Italy.
it better be made of like dinosaur fossils or something like that.
Someone,
for the love of God, tell me what a private sector project of this nature for 6 all-gender bathroom stalls. Tell me what that would actually cost to build.
I'm curious too.
There's no way. Unless I'm totally off base, there is no way it costs that much. I'm not saying, look, I know that the waterfront is this beautiful thing. We were down there last night and managed to make it out alive. It actually, in the market, it wasn't too bad.
It felt
pretty safe.
Yeah.
We didn't go to Third Avenue. That's the trick. I get it that you want it to be beautiful. You want everything to be visually pleasing. We're not saying you have to put up some like concrete mold and just have a hole in the ground for people to pee in. We're not saying that, but this is one of the issues with government. And why, by the way, everything is over time and over budget. It's because the government does not manage our money in the same way that the private sector manages its money. The private sector builds beautiful things. And you know what? They do it on time and on budget. And that is the issue with our government. And also, you know, they give so many contracts to people based on skin color. And what is their contract? It's like called the WIMBY? Women and Minority-Owned Businesses?
I don't remember the name.
Where it's like, I don't care. And they'll give it, and you might only have one woman-owned business or one minority-owned business. Right.
That's what you're supposed to do is get bids. Doesn't matter who's giving you the bid. Who can do it for the best, use of funds.
Brandy says she can build that bathroom for us for $5 million, and she's a woman, so let's just do it for her. No, I could do that. I'll figure it out. I will figure it out. I bet you I could do that for half a million.
Half
a million. I'm assuming there's some, plumbing stuff. Half a mil.
plumbing
stuff. Things, whatever it is. I mean, right? You just put the tube in and it would go right into the water, right? It's just the tube from the...
I think right, there's a little it's at the more
waterfront. No, no, no. I think it's just your tube and just right out to the water. I'm pretty sure that's how that works. So somebody please tell us, because I'm having an absolute meltdown involved, over this. Someone tell me why. Oh, I, of course, Mugshot Espresso would know. Minority and women-owned business enterprises.
Okay.
Can I get a contract? What kind of government contract can we apply for? So we're...
Well, I'm going to look into that.
No, I've said before.
Come up with one.
So we've got... All of my staff mm-hmm. is disabled. All of my staff is disabled. Half my staff is black.
Differently abled.
Half my staff, 50% yes. of my staff
yes. True.
Is black.
Mm-hmm.
And then also 50% of my staff are veterans. So 50% of my staff are disabled black veterans. I should be able to get something for that. Where is my grant?
I'm in.
Where's my grant? I'll build
a bathroom for $1 million.
Yeah. Wow. We need to go.
You know what we could do get the contract and then hire the people that know what they're doing and we'd still make something.
Yes. Eat your heart out, King Five. What percentage of your staff are BIPOC? What percentage of your staff, King Five News? Are veterans or disabled individuals?
Actually, they've got a pretty good percentage.
Differently abled. 50 though? 50%?
Not 50.
Are you sure you don't have like a little?
The BIPOC maybe?
Do you at least have like a Elizabeth Warren level of Native American in you?
I think
because I mean I'd be in the money.
Great grandpa. Well, on my I think my grandma's dad was Native American or her grandpa.
I wonder if Daryl's watching the show today. He's like, am I the token employee? No. You know, Daryl, I hired you for your skill, which is why you should hire someone.
And it is better than the $5 million porta potties.
You were just looking that up. Remember the story about they made these like, they were like fancy porta potties. Mm-hmm. They kind of look like the places in a, way off track. They kind of look like the places in a,
I don't know where we're going here.
In a airport. Where you pump, you do breast pumping. Yeah. You know, they kind of look like those.
A little bigger.
And they spent
like
$5 million on these things.
And they only had one toilet in them.
And homeless people just slept in them.
Yep.
So then they sold them on eBay for what was
like,
it?
I think it was $12,000.
Like $12,000 each?
Yeah.
$12,000. Which is probably about what they should have cost.
But, you know, anyway. You know, they're getting better, I guess, because I think we're getting 6 stalls out of this one. So
six?
That's
yeah, so $300,000.
But they have to have, for... the hours that it's open, they have to have security. So there's also that cost involved. So
yeah.
It's going to be an expensive potty.
It's going to be spendy. Hey, the waterfront's shaping up beautifully, though. So as long as we can get all of our you-know-what
really
together,
is.
Then it will be, I think, fairly enjoyable. All right. Unbelievable. Before we get to our national news and Biden's weird video
Everything.
Trying to, I think, appeal to black voters. I don't know. We're going to play it for you and you guys tell us what you think the goal is there. First, as we talk about your retirement portfolios, you work hard for your retirement. How much on the show do we talk about how freaking hard it is to be a working class person in the state of Washington? You're scraping, you're saving. All you want to freaking do is retire to Florida and just leave this state behind. But you need to make sure that you're not leaving your retirement portfolio open to risk, especially with everything going on right now. I mean, we've been talking to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital about the crazy stocks, about these crazy stock valuations, and people just want to jump on them. And he's like, I see that. I see the potential for money right now, but this doesn't make any sense. And so he says when he's managing their stock portfolio, he is really, really cautious about buying up some of the stocks that other people are buying right now.
A lot of the stuff in our portfolio was flying. One of our biggest positions was up 4.25. Second biggest position was up 2.5. We had a bunch of stuff that's won. We still slightly underperform the market today. And you know why? Because we don't own big piles of NVIDIA, Amazon, Apple, right? Those things. And we don't because the prices are ridiculous.
Yeah.
And great companies would love to own them, but I'm not buying them at this level with my worst enemy's money.
I'm not buying them at this level with my worst enemy's money.
He didn't say he'd use Pelosi's.
Yes, you cut that out. He did say maybe Nancy Pelosi's money. But all right, so I do suggest if you can make some time, especially if you're getting close to retirement with everything going on in 2024, Schedule a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach and his team. He's the Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. This is what they specialize in. They specialize in managing your risk. Their portfolio review, it's a great way just to see if you're overexposed to risk. There's no obligation. They don't even let you sign up to invest with them at your first meeting. So you just get to absorb some good information, ponder it, and then come back to them if you'd like. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Also, check out his weekly radio show at knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right. The inflation numbers have obviously been insane during Biden's presidency. There is no way around that. I mean, every single one of us feels it. And Fox had a little handy graphic using information from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics that talked about the inflation under Biden from January 2021 to January of 2024. Overall inflation up 17.6%. For food, that jumps to 34%. Energy, 33%. Electricity, 28%. Shelter, 19%. So if you feel poorer, but you're making the same amount of money, this is why. Because you are poorer. You have less money to go around. You have less money at the end of the day after you pay all your bills and buy all your necessities. And then this president had the utter audacity to go on Twitter and to complain about companies that are dealing with inflation through shrinkflation.
It's Super Bowl Sunday. If you're anything like me, you like to be surrounded by a snack or two while watching the big game. You know, when buying snacks for the game, you might have noticed one thing. Sports drinks bottles are smaller. A bag of chips has fewer chips, but they're still charging it just as much. And as an ice cream lover, what makes me the most angry is that ice cream cartons have actually shrunk in size, but not in price. I've had enough of what they call shrinkflation. It's a ripoff. Some companies are trying to pull a fast one by shrinking the products little by little and hoping you won't notice. Give me a break. The American public is tired of being played for suckers. I'm calling on companies to put a stop to this. Let's make sure businesses do the right thing now.
What? What are you talking about? What are you? There's no way that you're that oblivious to reality. And so it's obviously intentional, right? Like, let's mislead people. And blame it on these, what they blame it on best, all big greedy companies and shrinkflation. And for no reason, they're giving you less product in the same packaging. Oh, it's not that it's costing more to produce everything, to make it. So when you say we need to make sure that they do what's right for the company would then be selling the exact same product and just charging a lot more. So now if you've got a bag of chips, it's going to be $6.50. It's going to be the same size. It's going to be $2 more. So the outcome is the same. Either you're paying less for less stuff or you're paying more for the same amount that you had before. And this has happened under Biden because inflation has gone so much up so much under President Biden. So it's just insane to see this level of gaslighting happening. And that video was painfully annoying, by the way. But you want to know a video?
He says they're playing you for suckers.
No, you're literally playing us for suckers. They do think people are dumb. Now, I think there's a lot of people who'd see that video and be like, yeah, these companies, I don't think they're dumb. I think they're brainwashed. I think that they're so ideologically pure to a single political party and a single outcome, much like some people on the right as well, that they don't, there's no consistency there. There's no independent thought. And so there will be some people who just see that? Oh, it came from my party and my president, so 100%. So speaking of weird Biden videos, I'm just going to say it. This has to be Biden's attempt to appeal to black voters. And I saw a bunch of comments on the internet like, are you really trying to appeal to black voters by sitting down with black people and eating fried chicken? Is that... what else?
Oh, what else I absolutely think that's what this is.
So this video, Biden puts it out on his campaign page. And he just says, oh, sitting down with so-and-so, but no mention of who they are. I don't know who these people are. Mm-mm. It just uses first names. Like, are these just Americans? Like, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Cool. Like, sit down and have a, you know, good old-fashioned meal with to-go boxes and little squeezy ketchup packets mm-hmm. with regular Americans. But it's the weirdest. And he seems completely out of it. during the whole video.
Well, they have closed captioning on it. I think it's because you can't really understand him most of the time.
So not only that, but it's like, is this really your attempt to appeal to black voters by sitting around eating takeout fried chicken? Like, how racist is that? Watch.
Well, I mean, you got chicken fingers, you got I went the route of making sure I had a hamburger. So tell me about you guys. What you doing these days?
Why don't you share about your passion of sports?
I'm playing AAU basketball right now.
Are you really? Are you guard?
Yes, sir.
Now, what grade are you in?
Seventh grade.
Seventh grade.
Right now, I'm just doing basketball, playing guard on the JV team for my school.
How about the school? How are y'all doing in school? What should tell the president about the school?
Favorite thing about it is the business academy I'm in. We get to, like, travel, so we've been to, like, NC State, Wake Tech, and we...
You're kidding me.
Yeah, we went to this small dry cleaning business, and it's just, it's cool. It's a great experience.
I'm impressed.
Like, who are these people?
Is that a new program at the school?
Yes, sir, it is. It just started. Just a couple of years ago.
You know how much this guy loves you. You just feel it, can't you?
Yes, sir.
Your dad jumped in front of a bull for you. By the way, we dads are hard to raise once you're a teenager. We're hard to raise, so you gotta be patient with us, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
A little patient.
Is that it? Oh my gosh. And then he says to the kids, your dad would jump in front of a bullet for you?
Why are they having bullets coming at him?
It's just... But it was
terrible.
Like, but I'm watching that. First of all, I don't understand what it's for. I don't understand the point of it. It doesn't make him seem relatable at all. And can somebody, for the love of God, get them a freaking ketchup bottle? As opposed, they're at a house. You're telling me, you're clearly in a kitchen. You're telling me you don't have a bottle of ketchup in the fridge. You got to sit there and with his little... shaking hands, got to squeeze out the little ketchup for the love. That is one of the dumber videos I've seen. But what are you trying to appeal to? Who are you trying to appeal to? What are you trying to show that you're just a down home sort of relatable guy? He seems unwell. And by unwell, maybe unwell is not the word. He's too old to be president. He's too old mentally to be president. And especially after this whole independent counsel report came out and said, oh, we'd charge him for the documents he left in his garage next to the Corvette, but he'd just come across as an old man with bad memory. So your response to that and to basically an acceptance that you're not there mentally to be president, that video is your, what, pushback? Where you seem like a really confused elderly man sitting at a table eating with people who you don't know and who we don't know. Super strange stuff. Okay, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll questions and comments here. Nicole, should we do the show poll first?
Sure.
So I forgot to do this in the first block. I asked you guys, we talked about this bill that was passed overnight that would give unemployment benefits to workers who are on strike. So I asked you in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon and Locals and X whether you support the bill or not. Right now, an overwhelming majority of you say you do not support the bill. Chris says, absolutely not. This would pay people to go on strike. A strike should be painful for both sides. It also, as someone said in comments, and I don't know if Nicole's going to pull this one, it assumes that the company is in the wrong in a labor dispute, always. That it puts the assumption and the burden on them. Weisscastle says, especially not for the teachers union and other public employee unions who are supposed to be prohibited from striking anyway. They are supposed to be prohibited from striking. There is language in this bill that says if you're prohibited under law from striking, this wouldn't apply to you. But remember, when teachers have struck before, there has been no effort to get them back in the classroom, to hold them accountable. There are even some public elected officials who won't even acknowledge that it's against the law for teachers to strike. So I wouldn't put it past them for them to try to make this apply to teachers. Let me see here. CND Voss says it's a basic living stipend for the Democrats' biggest supporters, unions. More payback for political contributions. Hunter Family says unemployment is for when laid off by the employer. If you leave willingly, it does not apply. So this is expanding the program, and you know that it is just going to increase costs directly or indirectly. Now, if you're locked out and like there is no way, even if you wanted to, if other people are striking, that you can't get back in, I feel a little bit differently about that situation. But if you're on strike willingly and you're out there on the picket line, like, no, you're not getting paid, okay? You shouldn't get paid by taxpayers, and you shouldn't have to get paid by the company who you're not doing any work for. One more. Terry Lee says, "Jeesh, this will only cost the other workers of the state more money in the end. It's too bad that some workers have to strike to get their needs met, but why should I have to pay for it?" And look, it's not as if I think companies can do no wrong. I'm not 100% anti-union. I don't believe in public sector unions. But, you know, there have been some examples of times where, you know, strike was perfectly appropriate. But I agree with, you know, it's when you say it's too bad that some workers have to strike to get their needs met. I do think you have strikes that happen like the teacher strikes where you've got some of the highest paid teachers in the nation. And they're demanding more pay for themselves. And they're saying, oh, it's for the kids. It's for the kids. Where it's like, get back in the freaking classroom. Unbelievable. Okay, let's get some other questions and comments. Let me see. Sorry, I'm all over the place today. Shelley Rose says, oh, that was the saying. You catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. Is that true? They're little
tentacles. I've never tried it. I mean, I've tried vinegar, but I haven't tried honey.
Well, yeah, I couldn't come up with that saying. Sorry. You guys are always there for me, though. On the forest story and the $70 million of your money that's being spent on something that will actually hurt the environment in the long run, Todd Welch says shutting down a working forest is illogical. If you responsibly manage, then you can remove old trees, clear the land of dry brush, and plant new trees to start the cycle over. Anton Volter says, feel good about yourself commitment act, although 90% of Washington laws introduced are just feel good laws. Yes, like the no octopus farming law in a state where there's no octopus farming anyway. Brandon Robillard says, 250,000 gallons of diesel to move a cargo ship from China to USA. Yeah, you're telling me that, so you've got a forest that we use in this state to get timber to build, what do you call it when it's cut into wood already? What is the freaking word I'm looking for?
Timber? What?
No, I mean, like, hey, I got to go get some...
Lumber?
Lumber. Thank you. Oh, okay. Love of God. I'm telling you, my six concussions, there are days where it's like, I'm feeling those things. Yep. Today's the day. Lumber, and it's going to go to schools and to firehouses or libraries. Okay, mm-hmm. We're still going to have to, if you're not going to use it from this working forest, because you've shut it down, you're now importing more of that. So it's costing us more money. It's coming over on a cargo ship. It's coming to us in a way that will come through more carbon emissions. How does that make sense? Explain it to me.
It doesn't make
sense. It doesn't make sense.
I mean, the wildfire thing gets brought up every single year. Every single year, there's all these wildfires, and every expert says if we manage these forests better, we wouldn't have this problem to this extent. And they just ignore it. And that one, to me, I mean, then you're killing the animals. The trees are garbage. It's bad for the environment. It's bad for people breathing. I mean, there's
people
no winner
die.
In that.
Yeah.
There's no winner. And no. I don't understand.
And it was interesting. He was saying, I forget what, was it Ed Orcutt asking the guy from DNR, like, okay, if you're paying, like, it for the amount it costs you to close down 1 acre of this working forest, you could help make healthy 6 acres of forest that are susceptible to wildfires, which you're saying would have a better impact on the environment anyway.
Right.
And it would... for all the reasons you said, it would save lives, it would save property, it would save animals, it would do all these things. You're not doing that. Why? Because some hippies who tie themselves to trees want you to shut down a forest and not cut anything out of it?
There was a comment in here, follow the money. So I'm trying to decide who gets that money that it takes to shut down that forest. So
surprise, it's
maybe
me.
Maybe that is where it goes.
It comes to me. I'm actually benefiting from the
CCA.
This
I know $70 million.
I know that when I say something, people just vote entirely different on the left, and so I actually want the Climate Commitment Act. I'm benefiting from it. Let me see here. Charlie Knowlton says, "Hopefully, you will put the environmental segment on a separate YouTube post. I will share it. We will." Mm-hmm. We will. Alicia says, lack of management for our forests leads to increased fires, which continues to feed their narrative for spending money to combat for climate change and global warming. That's true. You cut back on the fires, man. Inslee can't stand up during his State of the State address and say our whole world is burning down and give us billions of dollars. On the gender neutral bathrooms, Matthew Cook says, that's a lot of money for a place to do your fentanyl. Yeah,
I know. And they think a security guard's going to stop it. As we mentioned, they're usually somewhat soundproof and you can just, how do they know what you're doing?
They're not
going
to know. The only time they'll know is when you come out and they get the whiff of the fentanyl smoke, which has a very distinct smell. And then they're going to be like, don't come back to this public restroom when I may or may not be here. Like, what are you going to do? Miranda. Hi, Miranda. That was so awkward. It felt like Biden just wandered into a random house and started eating their food. The dad looks so proud of the boys, though, and that's sweet. Yeah, he is obviously very proud of the boys, and I actually thought it was interesting, this program that the older son was talking about that helps introduce kids to the trades. I think you need more of that. But that wasn't how it was framed. The whole segment was framed as like, the president met with so-and-so. No context or anything. It's like, okay, if you're doing a segment where you're going to talk to this kid about this program that helps introduce kids to the trades so they can succeed later in life, make it about that. You spent more time focused on ketchup being squeezed out of a packet than you did about this kid and this program.
Also, where was mom?
Literally no
sense.
I
appreciate that dad was there, but again, no full family.
Nicole, they might have a mom.
I know. I'm just saying they don't show it because that would go against the nuclear family.
Oh, well, that got deep, eh? Well, you might be right. I don't know. Nicole said it. I didn't say it. I just want you
I'm
guys
just saying
to
that's
know.
What their shit they want. You know, that's part of the thing.
Yes. Good questions and comments today. Okay, we're gonna actually get done relatively on time today. Before we get to our closing sanity check, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. Lost 37 pounds, 30 of that in just 2 months. And as much as I love talking to you guys about my success in the program, I've heard so many of you. I love hearing your success stories. Ben and Leslie both took it. And Ben, he went from cooking bacon in the kitchen to running rock and roll marathons. I just heard from actually someone who was part of my wedding, my photographer, whose mom lost a bunch of weight and just gave her a whole new kickstart to life. And I think the big thing for me was the energy I got back from it. You know, now I'm back at the gym and I'm doing yoga and all these things that I just didn't have the energy or the enthusiasm to do before I lost all that weight. But also the Eastside program is just it's just how you're going to live your life. And it's super easy and it fits into your life and it doesn't feel like a lifelong diet. There's no prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no drugs or injections. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team today. You can ask all the questions you have. There's no obligation. Not every weight loss program is right for every person. So this might not be the right program for you, but I can tell you a lot of people have had success on it. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. And Dr. Ryan Coogan is just awesome. So I think you'll really like chatting with him to see if the program is right for you. Okay, let's get to our closing sanity check. Two suspects released without bail. This is just unreal. And it just, I think we have to continue. Sometimes I see these stories and I'm like, I'm not doing another story on the show today about some criminal that was released without bail. It happens too often, but that's the point. As soon as we accept this as sort of normal, which it's not, it's insane. As soon as we accept it as normal, then it's just going to continue and it is going to become normal and we cannot allow that to happen. So I don't know if you heard of this story initially, but there was these two suspects who were fleeing from police, shock of the century. And in fleeing from police, they broke into a random person's home in Edmonds. And thankfully, it sounds like the person was not home, which is good. Oh, they were home?
Yeah.
Wait, thought they were
fled.
Not home. Oh,
no,
they
fled out the front door because people were coming in the back door. So
yes,
they
sorry.
Fled out the front
they
door.
They fled out the front door. Thank you, Nicole. Mm-hmm. What would I do without you? And then these people sat in there in hiding from the cops and did drugs while the cops were shouting at them through their bullhorns to come out the door. So fled from police, scared people out of their homes, broke into a random home, sat in the home, did drugs while police were on their bullhorns asking them to come out of the home and they were refusing. So that's crazy, right? And that speaks to me as people who are mentally unstable, who are very dangerous if you're willing to break into a random person's home and who don't have an issue fleeing from law enforcement. Okay, so they're eventually arrested. Great news. Shock of the century, part of this Como News story, a judge opted to release them without any bail. Here's the clip.
Two suspects will be released without bail after being arrested for allegedly breaking into a home while running from police in Edmonds.
Police say the pair broke into a house at random, then started using drugs inside while officers ordered them to come out.
The 25-year-old man who was arrested didn't appear in court because he's in detox. But this is the 45-year-old suspect who police say also stayed in the home using drugs while refusing to give up. We're not showing her face because she hasn't been formally charged, but her defense attorney said she is a grandmother from Pierce County and needs to be released to take care of her family.
Her daughter works and she stays at home with her granddaughter.
The court commissioner said the level of charges did not meet the requirements for bail for the suspects.
The court does not find that there is a significant risk that she will commit a crime of violence.
Are you kidding me? Oh, she's just a poor grandmother. She needs to be home in Pierce County taking care of her family. Then why is she in Edmonds in someone else's home smoking drugs, fleeing from law enforcement? If she's just a poor grandmother who needs to be back in Pierce County taking care of her family, then that's where she should have been. To the idea that you have a judge who looks at the preponderance of evidence about what happened, you think if these two people came breaking into that judge's home, that judge wouldn't feel like that person is capable of an act of violence? But when it's somebody else's home and it's somebody else's community, no big deal. This is becoming normalized. We cannot allow this to become normalized. And we have to also hold judges accountable who make decisions like this. And in that interest of that, I'm not leaving until I tell you who the judge is. Hold on.
Well, Nicole. I actually think it was the commissioner.
Commissioner, court commissioner Jennifer Millett.
But the prosecutors were the one that reduced the charges
temporarily.
So far.
I know, temporarily, mm-hmm. because they are trying to put pieces together for higher charges. But you're still telling me, based on those charges, they were only asking for $25,000 bail. So the prosecutors reduced charges for now, but they still made a request for $25,000 bail. Something tells me that $25,000 would be hard for these individuals to come up with, not impossible, mm-mm. a reasonable level of bail, 10%. And then it gives them, people who've already shown a propensity to flee, it gives them some sort of skin in the game to come back to court and face up to what they've done. You think if you let them go with no bail, that they're going to be back in court? No, they're going to be doing drugs somewhere else in somebody
stealing
else's
cars.
House.
They were in a stolen car. Cars.
Insane. It's truly
crazy.
Insane. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you've not signed up to support the show already, it's an important election year. We could use the support. It's $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com.